Hello everyone, welcome to the new episode of CCYSC Avaz. I'm Saran Demiral from Istanbul, Turkey, and today I'm with Professor Spiros Spirou from European University Cyprus. He's a very well-known scholar from Nicosia, Cyprus, in anthropology and sociology of childhood. Thanks for accepting our invitation. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much for this kind invitation, Saran, and for this wonderful work you do with the Critical Childhoods and Youth Studies Collective. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Spiros. Today we will talk about climate change and young people by pointing out a recent study by Spiros and his colleagues, Eleni Theodorou and Georgina Christou. But before we start to mention this, let me begin with climate change effects in general. As two Mediterranean people from Turkey and Cyprus, we have experienced terrible wildfires during the summer months, as we all know that climate change is the most urgent topic for us nowadays. Us, I mean, not all only Mediterranean people, but people from all over the world. Here in Turkey, while public awareness has been increasing, governmental policies are extremely insufficient, so to say. The Turkish government even decided to ratify Paris Agreement in recent days as the last G20 country. And we also know that the requirements of this agreement are not sufficient enough, which is another crucial topic. So I can say that we have tension between public awareness in Turkey and governmental policies. What about in your country? What do you experience in your country about climate change effects and, let's say, a fight against climate change?
Just to start with Cyprus, you could say that Cyprus is a hotspot of climate change. And so is, of course, the entire region, the Eastern Mediterranean and the Middle East. Just to give you a sense of what we're talking about, at least from my own reading of some statistical information, temperatures in Cyprus have gone up almost 1.5 degrees during the last century, which is above the global average. We now get more heat waves throughout the year, which also last longer and are more intense. There has been an annual decrease in rain, in precipitation throughout this last century, and this continues and is predicted to continue throughout the 21st century. Like you pointed out, Saran, you know, we have had this past summer devastating fires in the whole region, in Greece, Turkey, in Cyprus. We had a big fire which destroyed a significant part of a wooded area in the island. This is happening. It's already been happening. Scientists predict that this will continue. Temperatures are predicted to rise between 1 and 3 degrees in the next 2 or 3 decades in Cyprus, and anywhere from 3.5 degrees to 7 degrees until the end of the century. Summers are expected to get longer. They already are longer and warmer. The weather is becoming more unpredictable. Sometimes we get flooding, and apart from the extreme heat. And as I said, these are all trends that are happening in the region. Cyprus is no exception, of course. And they create a lot of discomfort already for people, a lot of difficulty in daily life. They affect public health already. We have more instances of heat strokes. Perhaps in the future we'll see more viral disease, a worsening of the air quality. Again, these are things that are already to some extent happening, and we see them. If we take science seriously, then these are probably going to get worse. Now, these effects are quite obvious to me within the span of about half a century that I have been around. I have personally seen significant changes in the climate of the island. I haven't always been aware enough of climate change to think about it in those terms as I was growing up. But things have changed quite a bit in the 80s, 70s, 80s, when I was growing up. It was not unusual to get 2 meters, 2.5 meters sometimes of snow at the top of Mount Olympus in Cyprus. Now, sometimes we don't get any snow, and if we get some snow, it's usually under 1 meter. So a big change within my own lifetime that I've seen. Now we get these sandstorms, dust storms from the Sahara Desert a few times a year. I do not recall this when I was young. When I was growing up, we didn't have them. Or if we did, they must have been very rare because I don't remember them. But now they come, and sometimes they stay for several days, and the entire island is covered with dust, and sometimes it is very hard to breathe. And the government issues a warning, stay inside, especially if you're vulnerable, if you have a breathing issue or respiratory, illness or something like that. So when you come to realize what the trajectory of climate change is, you can't ignore it. I mean, I guess you can ignore it if you want, but it is highly irresponsible in many ways. But to get to your question, about what is being done, one of the problems, and this is not just a problem for Cyprus, but Cyprus is a good example of that. One of the problems with climate change is that there's not enough public awareness of the issue. Now, of course, people have heard of climate change. It is not that people are completely ignorant and naive of what's happening, but there hasn't been enough public discussion on the issue. The average person might not be fully aware what exactly climate change is, or might have a simplistic understanding of what climate change is, mm-hmm. And how will it will impact their lives, how it's impacting already their lives, and how it will impact their lives and the lives of future generations. So we have NGOs, for instance, which try to raise awareness. And more recently, I've listened to some programs on radio and watched some programs on TV where scientists are trying to make it more understandable and clear to ordinary people. But I still think we're at the beginning of this process of helping people understand what it is, what climate change is, and why it is important that we all do our part. The government hasn't been quite proactive in addressing climate change. The NGOs are trying to put pressure on the government, but they haven't been very effective yet. And with the recent discovery, you might be aware, in this part of the world, with the recent discovery of natural gas in what is called the economic zone of Cyprus. Mm-hmm. There has been political tension between Cyprus and Turkey, for instance, but the discussion has centered around exploiting these natural resources, bringing them to the ground, economically exploiting them. There's no discussion, for instance, about keeping them where they are because they're bad for the climate. And all the political parties are in support of this logic of extracting natural gas and exploiting it economically. So to kind of sum up this, we're still at the very beginning of a process of thinking about climate change in Cyprus seriously. There hasn't been much done at the political level, even though Cyprus would be in many ways an ideal place for developing alternatives, exploiting solar energy and so on. But again, though there are some initiatives, it's still not enough at this point. We still need to go a long way.
Thank you so much for all this quite detailed explanation about the country, the governmental policies, etc. But I think, as you indicated, living in an island might be something much more, let's say you have been dealing with something which as the residents in any other Mediterranean countries, we just have no idea, let's say. And also you underlined the lack of responsibility and ignorance of people in general. So let me correct myself, as I just needed to say that, yes, public awareness has been increasing for sure for more intellectual people, academic people, scientists, or I just need to add that perhaps because of social media, because of digital devices we have been using in our everyday lives, we have become more aware of what's going on in the whole country, in the whole world. So perhaps we can discuss something much more related to our topic in general. Let's say responsibility related to generational justice, because as far as I see, as far as we collected data from the fieldworks we have been interacted with children and young people, we see that perhaps for new generations that awareness has been increasing, we can declare. Your paper, which is called Children as Future Makers, I remember that you mentioned you joined a strike for climate action. By the way, according to the latest IPCC report, in the most optimistic scenario, we should just take the action right now. And I think new generations has been trying to do something. So in your country, could you tell us more about the political reactions of young people, the demonstrations have been organizing in streets, and all the organizations, NGOs, and how young people organize or interact with those kind of NGOs, for instance?
Okay, yeah. I mean, for me, these recent mobilizations of young people are part of a bigger issue. I mean, I've always been interested in studying the political lives of children, and my earlier work focused on children's national identities and the political conflict in Cyprus. So when I saw what is happening in recent years with climate action and young people, for me, that was kind of a very interesting a development at the global level. And that's why I ended up kind of pursuing this locally also through a research project. Now, the issue is important. I mean, climate change is an extremely significant issue. It's not just any issue. So I think recognizing that is a good starting point. And that also puts our attention to young people and studying young people's participation in these initiatives at the core of the discussion. So I start with that kind of basic understanding that we're talking about an existential issue here, and not just any issue, climate change. And what we are seeing is that young people are waking up, are saying, we need to do something about this. And they're not just waiting for adults or governments to take care of it. They are realizing that it's not going to happen until and unless everyone gets involved and puts pressure and works towards this goal, which is not an easy one to reach. We're talking about the survival of the planet. We're talking about our survival as a species, but not just. So we're talking about all living beings on this planet, the environment as a whole. So I think given children's initiative and role in addressing climate change. We have, as childhood scholars, as social scientists, whatever each one is doing, we have a responsibility to produce knowledge about children's political effort and mobilization. So it is, it's our task to highlight that and to provide that kind of critical knowledge that we need about these initiatives. So we need to understand the phenomenon of climate change, of course, and there's many scientists who are working on that, but we also need to understand the phenomenon of children's participation in climate action, because that will have significant effects about our future, the future of our children, grandchildren, and so on. So it's not enough for us as social scientists to celebrate children's participation in these movements. I mean, that is nice and we do it and we acknowledge it as significant, but it's not enough. We need to examine their participation in these initiatives critically, with an open mind, but still retain that kind of critical look at it. So when I saw the International Fridays for Future movement unfolding internationally, and then a local Cypriot group of young people kind of joining in initially quite reluctantly, but then becoming something of a small movement. I mean, given the size of Cyprus, we're talking about a small group of young people. I started following their protests in 2020. And then at some point, I approached some colleagues of mine. You mentioned Georgina and Eleni. And we started working more systematically. We applied for a small grant. We got the grant and started studying this group called Youth for Climate Cyprus a bit more systematically. This was a group which was inspired by Greta Thunberg's initiative initially, but they also try to develop their own way of approaching climate action, given the local context and the particularities of Cyprus. Now, to give you a sense of what they've been doing, at one level, and for the context of Cyprus, the kinds of protests that the young people organized were something new. Not because protests are new to Cyprus, but because these were organized by children and young people. So in a sense, there was, you could say, a bit of a surprise about the appearance of this group and their activism. So, you know, who are these kids and what are they after? What do they want to achieve and so on? And it's kind of a question mark there by older people, by adults. But also, I would say, some admiration by certain adults who also felt that these young people are doing the right thing. You know, here's our kids who normally, you know, would be passive and this and this, all the stereotypes about young people. Here they are rising now and they're acting on our behalf to bring about change. Now, because a lot of their protests were organized in alignment with the international protests organized by Fridays for Future, it was a bit easier to justify their organization in Cyprus and to get some media attention. So it also became easier for children as time went by to participate, because the Ministry of Education at some point said, okay, if you're going to the protest, given that this is part of an international protest, then you can go during school time and get excused absences. So it became more of it like an institutional approval of these initiatives as time went by. So they organized, just to give you a sense, a number of protests. Their main aim was, you know, to put pressure on the government to take action to address climate change. They organized one outside parliament. They organized another one outside the Ministry of Energy, another one outside the presidential palace. So kind of choosing institutions of power to express their resistance, their agenda to those in power. And their, you know, their tactics have mainly been working within the system. Okay, they're not, you know, trying to overthrow the system, though their rhetoric has been a bit more anti-systemic. So they are arguing for system change. They want a new world, a different world. But their tactics so far have been mainly working within the system because the alternative is much more difficult. I mean, they kind of have to, at least at this point, work within what is there and put pressure and so on. So they are, for instance, making recommendations of how to revise the curriculum of public schools to include more attention to climate change. But there is this interesting tension, you know, it's between working within the system and opposing the system at the same time and trying to, you know, kind of figure out where, as young people, they stand in relation to this issue. So just to give you that, was to give you a little bit of a sense of what they've done and how they position themselves locally.
But, you know, as a young person, but as an adult being, I only feel optimistic about climate change and the future of the world when I see those kind of movements, I can say. So children's movements and all the problems we have been dealing with as childhood scholars, as you mentioned, children's not taking so seriously. Might change due to children's movements and children's becoming political subjects in the face of current status. That's why I have been interested in climate change and children, let's say, because as you also underlined through all those demonstrations, organizations, children just try to lead, direct. They have the power to change the things. They have the power to take their responsibility against their lives. So in Turkey, I can give several examples, just like Greta Thunberg. Here we can say, I can say that we have several public figures like her. People call them local Gretas in Turkey. People know their names, follow them on social media. Besides these young people in Turkey, as you also said, they have been struggling for the current curriculum. They demand taking climate change classes at secondary, even primary levels. Now there's also a campaign about this I can mention. And I wonder, do you have such examples in your country, let's say local Gretas, some more popular kids just leading the demonstrations, for instance? And also, I would like to ask you something more crucial for me. In this research we have been mentioning, which is about young activism for climate change, let's say, there is no plan, there is no planet B. In addition to that part, education and current status of public schools, for instance, you also address that the network of young people in social media. What do you think about their young people's capability to do digital activism? Would digital activism become the future of politics for new generations?
Okay, these are interesting questions. I mean, your first question about, you know, having local Gretas or celebrities and so on. I mean, there are informal leaders of this group, young people who take a leadership role. These are the people who set it up, who established Youth for Climate Cyprus, and who do play a key role. These are the people who are on the, let's say, the front lines of organizing and so on. But they I wouldn't say that they kind of, you know, stand out as celebrities of the movement in any way. In fact, they try to downplay, and this is to their credit, in some ways, they downplay any kind of hierarchical structure within the group. So they go for a more horizontal structure where, you know, all the young people participate more or less equally. Now, of course, in practice, you do need some informal leaders who take it upon themselves to, you know, lead the way. They, this particular group, for instance, has working groups. They have different working groups, and each working group has one or two informal heads, let's say, who get to coordinate what is happening when there is a protest on, or just the ongoing work of the group. So there is some informal leadership, but they try consciously to downplay and to rework hierarchies of authority and power within the group. So they avoid this kind of celebrity kind of mentality that might characterize certain activist groups. So that's as far as you know, the kind of their take on leadership and so on. Now, as I said earlier, this is an interesting case study. I mean, Cyprus and our work with this group. A lot of these kids, at least initially, came from private schools. In private schools, there's a bit more attention, especially through geography, to issues of climate change. So they have been sensitized in a way that perhaps public school children have not. But in any case, now they are also keenly aware that this lack of attention in public schools. And I have to say that, you know, we had some talks with people who work in the Ministry of Education, and there are efforts underway to address climate change in through the curriculum in public schools. But still, there is a lack there. It's quite insufficient what we see so far. But anyway, the group has been trying to also bring in children and young people from public schools, because they see this as a larger effort. They don't want it to be an exclusive private school, you know, and let's say more privileged children kind of group who are arguing about climate change because, you know, they have, you know, their own agenda and their own lifestyles and so on. Now, as I said earlier, for a lot of them, Greta was an inspiration in this kind of path towards activism. It still is a symbol for many of them. And of course, she is. Her role in mobilizing millions of children and adults around the world should not be underestimated.
Well, sure. She just started something quite new.
Yes, and there was a response. And there was a response. How many activists in recent years have managed to have such an effect at a global scale? Yet at the same time, I think it's important that we should not displace the efforts and the activism of millions of other children around the world who have been fighting the climate crisis in their own local communities for much, much longer. This is not just in the last couple of years. So there's clearly a danger here of doing that, especially because of the media exposure that somebody like Greta can have, as opposed to other children who also do remarkable work, but nobody knows them beyond their local communities. But in any case, I think Greta, as a charismatic young person, was able to reposition climate change on the, let's say, the global political agenda. And she did that precisely by highlighting the political potential of children and young people as a force which needs to be recognized and taken seriously. The group we studied is locally connected with other NGOs, so they kind of unite forces and work on climate change together, other NGOs that have an environmental agenda. And internationally, they are connected with Fridays for Future and other similar international initiatives. I mean, our approach to this research was to talk to young people. We did interviews or conversations, as I prefer to call them, with them individually, collectively, in groups. We participated in the events they organized. Unfortunately, the pandemic and the first lockdown in Cyprus in March of 2020 prevented us from doing a more traditional ethnographic kind of study of these young people. But we switched online. I'm getting to your question about digital activism here. We switched online and did a lot of work online with them, a lot of discussions. And of course, given that they had access to technology and they were quite familiar with technology, it wasn't a big problem. This is not always the case. I mean, a lot of these kids were semi-privileged, you could say, in having, you know, all of them owning a laptop computer and being familiar with the use of technology and so on. So this is not always the case when you work with young people around the world. But nevertheless, it also, the pandemic and the lockdown brought to the forefront this question of social media and how young people, you know, had to readjust and rethink their strategy in working digitally. And this was a challenge. I mean, it was a challenge for them because, you know, in their efforts to push the climate agenda, they became a visible force through their protests and their demonstrations in the streets. Of course, you can still become visible online, but it doesn't have the same effect. And this is something that they were keenly aware themselves. They were realizing the limitations of online protests, for instance. They, at some point, they initiated an online protest where they took pictures of themselves folding posters. But again, it did not have the same political effect as a more traditional protest in the streets. Now, for them, social media is one of the main ways through which they recruit new members. It's one of the main ways through which they encourage participation in their events. I mean, I follow them on social media, so I know what they're doing, what's happening, and I participate in the events when they're scheduled. It is their main way of communicating with the larger Cypriot community, let's say, of interested individuals. So it is a powerful tool. It's something they have access to. They know how to use. They use it effectively. Some versions of social media they use particularly for their organizing within the group, others for communicating with people in general. So this is a great tool for them. But again, we should be careful not to kind of overestimate its impact. I'm not sure, for instance, that digital activism at this particular point can replace traditional activism. It's perhaps a complementary tool that young people can use, but the momentum, the emotionality that you see and experience in a real physical protest cannot, I think, be easily replaced by digital activism. And this is something that also came out through our conversations with the young people, that they are also realizing this limitation, despite the fact that they also know that social media are a great tool in their hands for enhancing what they can do as young climate activists.
But Cypriots, at this point, I just need to remind us, you and me, and perhaps all of us, all our listeners, we are adult beings, and our values, our thinking ways belong to traditional world. So we just don't know what is going to happen in the next several years. So perhaps that might replace, or let's say that digital activism might become a real starting point, because as you indicated, they just don't follow the celebrities, the popular ones, because they are also against all those kind of hierarchical levels. while revolting against adult authority, they just can't follow hierarchy. They need to remake all those kind of organizations more horizontal ways. So digital spaces might be a new starting point to rethink political organizations for new generations, so to say. Anyway, as you indicated, there have been many other activists for decades, not for only the recent years. So I can give Shutes Cattle Martinez as an example, a native American rapper, hip-hop musician and climate activist who was the youth director of Earth Guardians. And Martinez sang a rap song asking, who is the change? Who brings the change? And the answer was quite clear for them. We are the change, we bring the change. And this we pronoun signifies youth, as we may guess. And I'm also curious about how young generations from Mediterranean imagine their the future and their specific roles as future adults. Do you see any differences among children from different regions of the world? Maybe we can discuss about different childhood experiences from different regions.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that in general, the discourse, the main discourse of young climate activists in Cyprus is not radically different from the discourse that you know, young climate activists might have elsewhere. Just to give you a sense again, I mean, it was clear from our conversations with the young people that we talked to that they are quite worried about climate change. Many pointing out that they are very anxious about what they will experience in the future. They see a catastrophe coming, and they blame the previous generations, as well as the inaction of governments today, which are unwilling to address a problem in practical ways. They are worried that they will not be able to live a normal life in the future, that it will be pointless to have children, that their health will suffer greatly, and so on and so forth. So they express what we would call eco-anxiety and feel that unless they take charge and do something about climate change, nothing will change. So this is kind of their position, which is not radically different from what we hear, you know, young people who are part of this, mobilizations elsewhere. So they do see themselves, and I use that term, future makers. They do see themselves as future makers, as those people who will try at least to redirect the course of history and allow for a more sustainable future. They want a future that will be more equal, more just, more inclusive, with less oppression, and so on. Now, at the same time, they try to stay close to local realities. So they find causes and link with others to make their climate activism more meaningful for their local audience. Their audience is primarily a local one. Okay, they're part of a larger world to do. They feel anxious and quite often depressed about the future, but they also try hard to not let that kind of emotional reaction that they have and their feelings of anxiety and so on to take over. So they try to redirect their attention to hope. And how do they do this? Through their collective participation. For them, hope is not an abstract concept. It's not something I'm hoping for a better world, but they ground their hope in their collective action, in their ability to be part of something bigger than themselves. So they participate in this small local group, and through their participation, they acquire more hope. And that sense of hope allows them also to go back and do more collective work. So it works kind of in a circular way. Hope reinforces activism, and their activism reinforces hope for what is to come. So this is, you know, an interesting kind of reworking of, you know, what they initially got from the International Fridays for Future movement, and they are reworking it and making it more meaningful for their local lives. They try to argue for the need to take action in Cyprus, because Cyprus is affected by climate change and not just the world as a whole. So it's this interesting work that these young people are trying to do, I think, which requires a little bit more systematic study and attention to see how young people actually make sense of this crisis, figure out ways to cope with them, because, you know, they can very easily and quickly lead to paralysis. You know, you just give up. You know, it's just too much, too overwhelming. You're scared about everything and about the future, and anxiety builds up, and you become paralyzed. But they have ways through which they cope and make it meaningful so that they can go about their daily lives and still retain a sense of hope that they can change the world somehow. Also here, just going back to your earlier point, I mean, yes, they see themselves as the future, okay, and as being the primary future makers, but they also are quite aware of the need to let's say, intergenerational collaboration and solidarity. They extend a hand to older people, to adults, and say, look, you know, we need you. You know, we realize that maybe you guys have made mistakes in the past, but now it's time for all of us to work together. So they have also a clear agenda that seeks to integrate intergenerational collaboration, and they have been to some extent successful in attracting that kind of attention, though again, it's an ongoing process which needs quite a bit of work on their part to convince adults that cause is worthy, and they should join them in fighting for a better future.
Thank you for that. You bring us to a very nice point by mentioning the hope in the beginning. And after all, I may say that perhaps Zeitgeist, because I asked you the question, which is about regional differences, different childhood experiences, but then you just underlined their being closer to some emotions more than the others. So perhaps Zeitgeist, the spirit of time, seems more significant than regional differences, some geographical differences for the new generation. And as far as I know, while mentioning climate change and childhood activism, we always underline the importance of intergenerational justice. And here you also mentioned about all those, their willingness to develop intergenerational collaboration, which is quite important. So I think youth political participation is one of the most important issues nowadays. And perhaps we as, let me say that, as the CCYSC team, we are willing to discuss methods, methodology in childhood studies meanwhile. We would love to invite you for another episode on the roles of children and young people, and we can discuss methodology and children's research by indicating all the differences we underlined today. It was a very nice conversation, but I think our time is limited, so I can sit up just at this point. Do you have any other ideas about new generations, how they perceive the world, their future roles, their perception about the future world. If you have anything to add, please, the floor is yours. But I think that hope part is quite inspiring for me, and I will rethink about their being hopefulness and how we can utilize that hopefulness to recreate new politics of our everyday life for democracy and human rights with children, with new generations.
It is clear now that, at least to me, that children's interests, their ability and their willingness to participate in politics is there. They're not necessarily interested in the more institutional forms of participation, being part of political parties and so on, but more in having their voice heard more directly in the public arena through their social movement interventions. So I do not want to romanticize children's political participation. Children, like adults, may also opt for counterproductive political participation. They could join a fascist group, for instance. So we need to retain a critical look at what children's political participation, this kind of social movement activity that they engage in, what this means for the 21st century, how we can understand it, and how we can potentially, as adults, enhance and support it when their struggles are just. So this is my kind of understanding of what needs to be done. And with regards to your last point, I would love to talk to you again about methods or any other related issues in another podcast, Sharan. Thank you so much. I will be so glad.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss with you issues of common interest and concern. And I really enjoyed it. And I look forward to our next conversation. Thank you.
Me too.